Well, hello there, and thanks for joining us on the My Love of Golf podcast. Wherever you are around Australia, around the world, we really do appreciate you tuning in, and thank you for all of your support. This week's episode, we catch up with a young golf-specific strength and conditioning fitness professional. It's Billy Troy, now Billy Troy from Golf Physio Australia. He's available online, he's available on Instagram, but Billy is dedicating his work to golf-specific strength and conditioning. And in this episode, we have a wide-ranging conversation around golf-specific strength and conditioning, and we try and cover everything. It's fairly general, but you can contact Billy. Billy does some work online with clients, so he can coach you online, but he's got a great website, a great Instagram account, and some free resources there. All the links are in the show notes. But this episode, if you want to build your golf fitness for summer, well, maybe this episode's the one for you. Billy Troy, Golf Physio Australia. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the episode with Billy Troy. Billy Troy from Golf Physio Australia, welcome to the My Love of Golf podcast. Billy, you're up there in Brisbane. You can see here I'm in Melbourne. We just had a chat about where each other were. We don't actually know each other that well, so we've never met, but this is, you know, one of those great podcasts where someone values what the My Love of Golf podcast and the listeners and the reach that we have. You've reached out, and it's really great timing because you know that we've just done a little bit of a fitness-related podcast. You wanted to get involved and have, you know, some level of input to the world that you experience for golf fitness, Golf Physio Australia, obviously physio and sports and golf specific physio training. So I really appreciated you reaching out. As I said, you're in Brisbane. I'm in Melbourne, you know, and, you know, we can't start a podcast without chatting about the weather. Weather's boring, but, you know, there's only two seasons in Melbourne. That's hoodie season or not hoodie season. And it's still clearly hoodie season in Melbourne, but it's definitely not where you are in Brisbane, where I was just saying to my wife this morning, it's always summer in Brisbane. There you go. Billy Troy, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, Ross, and I do really appreciate the time. And like I said to you just before, I've listened to a bunch of your podcasts with Jamie in the Mental Mastery podcast, so well done on that. But yeah, mate, I'm in Brisbane here. Obviously, I'm wearing a T-shirt. You're wearing a hoodie, so I do feel slightly sorry for you today.
The reason why I did talk about the weather and the difference where we are is because, and we'll talk about a number of things in this podcast, because it could go, you know, golf training. I know from what I do, talking to golfers all day, every day, it can go anyway. But I do know from talking to golfers that some of their issues, I help them with a number of things, i.e. golf equipment, which we know can help their game. I know people that are in the coaching and training space can sometimes think that golf equipment isn't the answer. And I definitely agree. But usually, always a conversation that I have tends to be what other aspects of a golfer's life is holding them back from better performance, from peak performance. And I'm on open enough in my business to talk about equipment can help, but certainly there are other things and other people that can help you develop and deliver better performance. You fall into that category of one of the other experts that can help people improve their performance by improving their strength, their condition. And for me, that's really pertinent, but I'm sure for golfers of all level and all ages, it's really, really powerful. So give us a background to Billy Troy, golf specific physio. How did you come into it? How's the journey been? And then we'll talk about how you can help, because, you know, you offer your programs online. That's why I did talk about Brisbane and Sydney. You can do programs online, which is great. So let's get into the journey, mate.
Yeah, definitely. And thank you for that. So my journey starts back playing a lot of rugby league and golf as a young guy. So typical young guy, very stiff, very tight. So a lot of different muscular injuries, back stress, things like that. And I started going to a physio when I was about 14. So my mother pushed me towards it and said, look, just go to a physio consult and see what they can give you. And I was really surprised. So they gave me a lot of stretches, different exercises. Within probably 2 months, like some quite severe back pain settled down to almost nothing. So that tied in, I guess, my love of physio and love of like the body and fitness as well. So as I got a little bit older, played a little bit more golf, just played at a junior, not elite level, but a decent level, and really enjoyed it. So with that, the sports performance didn't really go to plan. Like I was aiming probably more towards going to rugby league, in all honesty. So I used to play with a feeder club for Penrith Panthers. With that as well, it didn't go completely to plan. So then I started studying. So I thought, I'm not going to make this sports game, studied physio. And I guess the passions blended together, mate, physio and obviously golf. And here I am now, 5 years later, into golf physiotherapy and helping clients all over the world, like I mentioned to you just before.
So golf, you know, was golf something that came back to and thought, you know, this is a, was golf a complementary sport to you, or was it like you're always really passionate about it and then you saw a niche for golf, or did it just sort of happen symbiotically because you took up golf again because you weren't playing, you know, the other physical crash and bash sports? You know, was it always the plan that, you know, you saw this opportunity for golf and physio and the development of programs specifically for that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So golf was always my summer sport. Again, playing a lot of rugby league as a kid, I'd play golf all summer. So my mum would drop me and my brother off to the golf course, would play for 6 hours a day. And that's just what we did. And after I finished uni, I was about 22 at that point, started treating just general population clients. And I started to play more golf to have more time on my hands. Like at uni, I was working two jobs, studying. I had no time for golf, essentially. So when I had a bit more time on my weekends, I started to pick up golf again. And I was really enjoying it. And obviously with the physio side, I was really enjoying that. But I just thought to myself, yeah, I'm liking this physio stuff. I think I can help golfers. And I started to pair them together. So there was an opportunity there as well. And in that time, I did my Titleist Performance Institute in Chicago, America. Yep. So I did that that screening process and I thought, this is perfect. And with physio, you get someone walking off the street with anything, back pain, neck pain, shoulder pain, et cetera. And I hate being the jack of all trades. I really like to put myself into a niche. I feel like I can help the person. I understand their wants and needs, and I can give them a proper service, I believe.
Yeah. So with that, those early days of you branching into that golf specific physio, what type of clients were you traditionally typically exposed to, and what were you seeing as some of the common themes of, you know, issues that everyday golfers like me and the people that listen to the podcast, you know, we're presenting with and dealing with?
Yeah, so the typical golfer that I'd see would be, let's say, 35 to 55 year old male or female struggling with back or hip stiffness and typically lacks a lot of mobility. And also as well, as a young physio, I was luckily exposed to a bit of professional golf as well in terms of golf physio. Adam Kelleher, who was a pro at Windsor golf shop there where I was playing a lot, he exposed me to a couple of professionals. So I was working with them at a pretty young age as a physio. So I saw a lot of general population clients, like I said, that suffer with back or hip stiffness. We also saw a few professionals as well. And that's a slightly different type of physio. They're more high performance, looking at strength and mobility, whereas a general population are looking more at pain relief and mobility.
And, you know, in that, let's talk about the, before we get to the elite, let's talk about the everyday golfers, that pain relief and mobility. Does things like TPI cater for clients who, you know, have pain relief and mobility? Does it blend in, or is TPI just performance, or pain relief and mobility is just, you know, you're looking at treating specific areas and get that right before we start expanding into other areas?
Yeah, every golfer that I see starts with a TPI screening. Yep. So I think it's a really good generalized test. So it goes through all of the golf specific movements for a golf swing. So every golfer that I see either online or face to face, they'll go through a 1 hour screening with me. So I'll take them through that screening process. I'll go through past injuries. I'll also do some physio tests if I think it's needed. And that basically sets me up. And then we talk about goals dependent on whether they just want to play on the weekend or play professionally. Obviously we need to tailor the program specifically for them, but that's where I start the process.
And when you get into that process, what do you see happens? You know, take us through an example that comes to mind of a client that you've had experience with that's worked really well, and then what does the client experience look like that doesn't work so well?
Yeah, so let's talk about one golfer that I'm seeing at the moment. He's down in the South Coast. So he works in finance. He's at a desk most of the day, and he struggled with a lot of hip and back stiffness. So like I was mentioning before. So we did the screening with him. We identified that he had a lot of mobility issues in his upper back, torso, basically his whole spine. So we set up a mobility program for him. And I've been working with him for 2 weeks now, so not too long. And he sent me a message the other day through the training app that I use, pardon me. And he said, every tee shot I'm hitting is about 5 to 10 meters longer. And that's in a couple of weeks. So that's a pretty good experience. He's feeling less pain and he says he hasn't hit the golf ball that long in quite a while. So that's a good experience. Bad experiences, I've been lucky to have very few. there was an experience. This is back around 2 years ago. Now I had a professional, or almost a professional golfer. He was a late amateur, where he was really struggling with a wrist injury. And there was probably a communication breakdown between me and him. I thought his wrist was getting better from what he communicated to me, and it wasn't. So he ended up getting a MRI of his hand, which showed a small stress fracture. So that just put us back quite a bit in terms of his recovery. But again, that was probably more of a communication breakdown from both of us. I'm very lucky that most golfers I see typically get a good outcome.
So I guess, you know, for me, I think about, I'm on this journey, you know, and most of the people who listen know that I started before I went to Scotland in July, August, on an April, May, June training program. You know, I've just past 50, so it's a really important time for someone my age to keep their mobility, their strength, as the body starts to degrade. But then I've come back and not being able to recommit to the journey so far. I haven't reconnected yet. Mentally, I have. Physically, I haven't. You know, what do you see? What are the, for the people, do you have many people that sort of start and then stop really quickly? Or, you know, if someone is thinking about it, you know, what are the keys to starting and then wanting to keep going?
Yeah, like, it can be a bit of an issue, Ross, and it comes down to a couple of different factors. But one big thing I've tried to really, I guess, stand myself out from other health professionals and golf physios is really hold the person accountable. So I'll take you back 2 years when I used to write these golf programs for clients. I would write them a Word document, very basic. It would have their exercises. It would have a plan, and I'd send them on their way. They might come back and see me once a fortnight or once a week. And I found they weren't very adherent to the exercises. So I did some research and I've looked around at different services that online programs can offer. So I'm using a platform now called Trainerize. And with that, the golfer, I can see them log their workouts day to day. So it just holds them a lot more accountable. Mm. And if they're not doing well, I can get on their backside and tell them to ramp it up. Or if they're doing too much, I can also tell them to pull it back. Yep. So that's a really big tool. But also, it's probably tapping into the client's goals. That, say, if I'm not working with someone, for you, for example, it's probably setting a goal, probably having a short-term goals ideal as well, not having it too far ahead, and just saying, okay, if I want to get to that, what do I need to do about it?
From your professional experience, you know, how does the brain work? You know, we talked about the Mental Mastery Golf podcast and the great work that Jamie does with his professional clients, and how you really tap into that and you like that at those episodes that we do. And I know from my golf perspective, I've got a lot from just being on the other side of the microphone, but, you know, I'm always interested in how the brain works and the, you know, whether it's that sort of dopamine response or what are the endorphins that kick off training and sustain that. You know, what are the things professionally that happen in the brain to get someone to keep engaging with strength and fitness development?
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually read a book not too long ago, probably 2 months ago, called Hooked. And this was basically talking about that exactly. So from the book, if you're doing something more often, it's more likely to stick. And it's very important the first couple of weeks you have a high adherence to that, because what happens, you start to build some patterns, your body starts to become aware of it. And like you said, you start to have that dopamine release as well tick over. So it, again, going back to my programs, for the first couple of weeks with my clients, I'm really on their backside. I'm giving them a lot of messaging, making sure they're doing the work. And they typically start to build a pattern with that. So if someone's listening at the moment, what can they do? It's probably setting, again, short-term goals, having a daily process that they go through if possible to try and tick off that goal, and making sure that it's also achievable as well. You don't want to set those goals too high.
Yeah. And, you know, what about the elite players? So let's talk about some of your elite athletes. You know, what have you experienced with them? How does their program differ? How do you engage with them, and what are they doing? Because I, you know, listened a little bit to your podcast, and we should talk about it, with Toby McGeechee. So Toby is one of Australia's, you know, up and coming and very well known coaches through Skillist and online. He's got a great profile building. And you know, you spent a lot of time talking about golf physio and then coaching and how that relates to different postures and positions and all of that sort of thing. How do you then, you know, support an athlete that's going through some golf coaching.
Yeah, and with the athlete and with golf, I think the first thing is making sure that they don't get injured, because with golf, it's so many repetitions. The body's going through this rotational movement that isn't very natural for us. So I need to make sure that injury prevention is the key if they're an athlete. And now as well, we're all seeing it. They're all hitting it further. So speed development is a really important thing as well. So when I see an athlete and they really want to go to the next level with their golf game or do something professionally with it, they're the two big things that we're looking at. And having good communication with the coach is also really important. So how they differ from a general population client or someone just wanting to play weekend golf is that their training's typically a bit more intense. We've got some key metrics we're aiming for. Normally I'm measuring things such as vertical jump, squat, also deadlift, max lifts. And we're just monitoring those things closely over time. Whereas someone that just wants to play weekend golf, we might be looking more at just their mobility measurements, for example. But again, it's very different in terms of how those two programs are built.
I heard Toby and I heard yourself talk about squats. certainly was one of the exercises that I was getting more involved with, despite the fact that sometimes I couldn't walk for 2 days after it. Why do you see every elite golfer, whenever you see them training in a gym, you know, I was lucky enough to be at the Open and, you know, I could walk past the players' gym. And even in their warm-up preparation, you know, in tournament days, they're doing squats. Why is that so important?
Yeah, so the squats, they cover a number of different muscle groups when you're doing it. So when you're doing a squat, you're working your glutes, your hamstrings, your quads. So that's the first part of it. You're getting a lot of muscle activation. So it's a really good movement if you're limited with time to cover a lot of different things. And also with the golf swing, the squat is very functional. So most people in their backswing will sit into that squat position. And from there, to hit the ball really far, you need to push down into the ground with your legs to create ground reaction force, which helps with club head speed. So if you're really strong in your squat, you can push into the ground more and use that ground as leverage to create speed. So on the PGA Tour and European Tours now, or the LIV Tour, you wouldn't see many golfers that aren't doing squats in the gym, because A, it's such a good movement, and B, it's so functional for the golf swing.
We're going to come back to, you know, talking about what people can do you know, from a golf physio perspective to help them on their way. You know, even if they don't have a program, what are the things to look out for to prevent some injury and then help them be better golfers week in, week out? But let's keep talking about that for a little bit. You know, because it's easy, I think people see, like me, you know, Rory and whoever else doing squats and wanting to do that. But unless you're doing all of the other exercises and understand the movements, it doesn't necessarily always lead to a better power, a better ground force. You know, like you talked about my swing and you said early extension. You know, I can imagine through the swing, if someone, you know, is not rotationally strong through the hips, that they can do as many squats as they want and start to use that ground force. And then as they pop up, it's just going to lead to the hips moving forward, the butt of the club coming up and leading to what we call early extension, which gives you, you know, poor club face at impact and, you know, poor path and all the other things. You know, I'm not a golf professional, but I know enough about it to know sort of that sort of thing. You know, the average golfer can see a high performance athlete doing squats and they might want to jump in the gym with that instruction and start doing squats and think that can benefit them. But then, you know, what you see is, and what you, maybe you picked up on my swing, is that a little bit of that hip, that as you use the ground force, the hips move forward, the butt of the handle raises, you know, you deliver the club inappropriately or incorrectly at impact, you know, maybe a little bit of path over the top. I think you call it early extension. You know, what are the other exercises or things that you can do that are connected to that squat that might help with that rotational movement?
Yeah, it's such a good point. And I'll go back to the example of this client that I'm currently seeing at the moment that gained 5 to 10 meters. So he has a powerlifting background and a CrossFit background. And I sent him his program and he said, hey, there's no powerlifting in here. And that's because if you're not flexible, you can't actually use that power that you possess. So if you're not getting into good swing positions, you can't really use your legs as they should be used. So when it comes down to building a good athlete and especially a good golfer, you also need to make sure that they're balanced, they're flexible, They've got good core endurance. And then the strength and power comes last, really. So if someone doesn't move well, they're not going to use that power. I think of almost a bodybuilder, for example, trying to play golf. You probably see someone that's really jacked up and they try and swing and they can barely take it back and they pull across the top. So you need to be really flexible. And then you need to be able to use the power secondary to that.
Mm. I played a bit of golf and I sent you a video that had both his and my swing with a young athlete from Melbourne City Football Club, Andrew Nabu. Great fella. Loves his golf. Developing golfer. But you can see, if you look at him physically, he is a specimen. Strong in the glutes, strong in the legs, and he's just a power player. But he loves his golf, and he looks at, you know, old man me go out there and swing it. And hit it 100 past him, and you know, like, he says, how do you do that? And I said, I don't know, you know, like, it must be all that time in the gym, you know, obviously knowing that he's spending hours and hours in the gym and he's absolutely cut, you know, like, and yeah. It's interesting just, you know, using that example of someone who's really fit but doesn't have that flexibility or hasn't trained that golf specific movement, you know, and the difference between just being strong and fit but having golf specific strength and flexibility is a probably key. So if, you know, if you're listening to this and you are someone that, you know, does spend a lot of time in the gym and you are fit but you're still struggling with your golf, well, the two disciplines as we're talking are somewhat connected but very disconnected in terms of using what you have as your asset to build your golf swing. So that's why, you know, your skill is so valuable to people who want to develop their golf. Does that make sense?
Yeah, can I just add something to that as well, Ross? Go. So some people that are listening might have heard of the kinematic sequence.
Mm-hmm.
So what that basically means for people that don't understand it is using the body parts in the correct sequence in the golf swing. So when we take a backswing, our hands will take the club back, then it's our shoulders, then our chest turns, then lastly our hip turns. On the way back down in our downswing, it's the reverse pattern. So the hips lead the downswing, then it's the torso, then the chest, then the arms last. Whereas what a lot of people do, a lot of weekend golfers will do, at the top of the backswing, they will lead with the arms first. And this person that you're talking about, this athlete, he might be coming down with the arms first, so he's out of sequence. And when you're out of sequence, you lose a lot of your elastic energy. If you're doing it correctly, your hip will lead first, and it creates a stretch between the hip and the club handle, which you can use as power. So to gain some quick distance, it's really getting that sequence correctly. There's a lot of good videos you can watch online. I've got one on my Instagram about it. It's so important, and it's probably the easiest way to gain 10 meters if you're doing that movement incorrectly.
Good that you lead into gaining 10 meters. You know, you you are a what are the
super speed,
yeah. So they have a program which you're accredited in.
That's right.
I heard something a number of times, but I heard it fairly recently, and it reminded me of, you know, what would be the greatest advice that you'd give to a young developing golfer. And in a nutshell, they basically said, get the young person to swing it as hard as they can. try and hit it as far as they can. And and to a lot of people, you know, and especially the purists, you know, that are sort of timing and, you know, the whole beautiful part of the golf swing, that can seem at odds. What does that mean? When someone says, just get this young person to swing it as hard as they can, what does that mean?
Yeah, good point. So obviously now we're seeing that on the multiple different golf tours, golf club head speed is such a big predictor of performance. And even at the club level, if you hit it around 250 meters or more, you're very likely to be a 5 handicapper or below. And if you hit it shorter than that, you're very likely to be above a 5 handicapper. So club head speed is a big predictor of performance. And when it comes to young junior development, it's practically that. It's trying to swing it fast. And if you're a golf coach, or if you're a parent and you've got a young child that wants to play golf competitively, it's maybe just having a couple of sessions a week for half an hour. They can use their driver, or they can buy some speed sticks. And it's probably giving half an hour in each of those sessions to just try and swing it fast. Don't worry about where the golf ball goes. Don't worry about what the swing looks like. It's just looking at the club head speed purely. And I'll just reference Matt Fitzpatrick, who won the US Open this year. So in 2019, he was hitting it about 290 yards. This year, he's hitting it 310 yards. And he gained 1.6 shots per round just because of his club head speed game. And a lot of people are saying he's not anywhere in the question in that US Open without that club head speed. So I do understand you need to putt it good, you need to chip it good, you need to strike your irons, but club head speed is definitely one of the things that people need to look at.
And once again, going back to the Mental Mastery Golf podcast, you know, because you've listened to it, that my short game isn't my strength. But, you know, to your point, I'm able to maintain that sort of 4 or 5 handicap, even with limited practice, because fortunately, you know, speed is my asset. It's just something that I had as a kid, and I've been able to develop whatever movement to maintain that speed. And it certainly helps you being able to hit the ball closer to the green and having shorter shots to the target than longer shots. So it definitely helps cover up some of the other sort of deficiencies in my game. I should probably spend time with Marcus Fraser down at the PK Chipping Green working on the short game. Might get somewhere in the game, but who knows. But yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I see a lot of clients in my business that, once again, going back to what we talked about before, looking for solutions through technology. And there are many proven examples that golf club technology can help with ball speed. You know, especially if they're upgrading from old technology, which in our case is many of the times. You know, it's not just, oh, we're going from the latest driver to the next latest driver. There are people like that, but usually people that we see getting into some of the new technology are upgrading from some of the older technology, and it might not equate to distance, but sometimes forgiveness off across the face and all of those other benefits that I do know work. But you know, they'll pick up a tool like the Orange Whip, and I say, great that you've been drawn to that beautiful piece of equipment, you know, very clever marketing, making it orange because it stands out. Oh, what is it? And the Orange Whip, you know, it's just essentially a flexible swing warm-up device. But I actually say, you know, if you use this as part of your warm-up and training, it can actually work as a speed training device, because if you can, am I wrong in saying that? Like, if you swing that, you know, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and you put some motion and energy into it, that it would actually have a cumulative effect of helping the muscles in the group work, because it's a weighted, well, it's basically a weighted device. Would that work?
Or am I telling you? Yeah, 100%.
Oh, good.
100%. And just on that quickly too, Ross, that device definitely helps with sequencing, and it helps with lag as well. So that Orange Whip, you hear that speed through that impact zone, and that's the sort of release of the head that people will be feeling. So again, a lot of people that pull over the top will release it early and lose a lot of that lag. So yeah, to your point, that will certainly help.
I do find that, you know, when they do make them swing it hard, that they end up swinging off the feet. They end up, and I said, well, there's another part of your training, because you have to maintain that balance. You know, if you can swing this as fast as you can and maintain balance, you know, you're going to be in a better position than you were when you walked in. To spend another $120 or whatever it is, because it made me think about, you know, time. You know, let's get to talking about some of the videos that I sent you, and, you know, your quick analysis on maybe some of the issues that I face with. Because I was interested to see just from the video what you thought. Let's go back to lockdown. You know, us Melbourneites were locked out of golf. We were locked in our houses for, you know, that's well reported, for, you know, 39 million months and all that sort of stuff. I thought, well, I'll get into it. And I got a net and I started hitting some balls, and I got my Orange Whip out, and I started swinging it as fast as I could. Now, I was on a little bit of an incline, a decline, in the backyard, just had some runners on. Now, this is going to make sense when I tell you this. I rolled my ankle.
Okay.
Now, I didn't roll my ankle because I was using the Orange Whip. The Orange Whip is a perfect. But I rolled my ankle because my left ankle is horrendously weak. And it's weakened through soccer injuries, rugby league injuries, walking on the sand injuries, looking for golf balls in the rough, you know, rolling my ankle injuries. And it's just weak. And it'll give me issues as I get older, and it gives me issues now. But so be careful if you have weak ankles and you're swinging anything flat out. But let's get back to the video that I sent you. So I said, well, have a look at my swing. You know, what do you see? You know, for this 51-year-old aging muscular frame, what did you see?
Yeah, and very polite of you, Ross, sending it 2 minutes before we got on there, mate. No, but I love pressure.
Nothing like a bit of pressure.
Exactly, I love pressure. So, no, you sent through a couple of little swing videos, And what I look at when I'm looking at someone's swing, I'm looking at more of the physical side because I'm not a golf coach. I'm a physio. So I'm looking at things that can potentially improve someone's performance or decrease injury. So that's my take. So as soon as I looked at your video, I saw that your backside was coming closer towards the ball before impact. And that's what we call early extension, like you've mentioned in this podcast. And also the other thing I was looking at as well was your hip position. Coming down to where the club is parallel to the ground on the downswing, and your hips were quite square with the target, whereas a lot of pros are starting to open up their lead hip, so it's open towards their target. So as soon as I saw that, I thought for you, you must lack some left hip mobility, or maybe the sequencing potentially isn't as good as it should be. And also I was thinking potentially you could have some back stiffness with the fact that you're coming towards the ball. And what would you say to those findings, mate?
Yeah, definitely back stiffness. You know, I sit down. Well, through lockdown and since then, I'll probably sit down more so than I have, you know, previously, standing up all day and walking around a store every day, which probably had its own sort of set of contributing factors through.
Yeah.
But definitely some, you know, sciatic pain occasionally. You know, I'd get that. If I lift something the wrong way, I might get that bad back that, you know, stays with me. Have a look at my, you know, look at me now posturally. I'm sitting in a low chair. I'm hunched over. I should be up. So, you know, like I'm my own worst enemy. But definitely that lower back pain, correct?
Yeah.
But definitely, you know, it's been pointed out, but my left glute is far smaller than my right glute. You know, I'm not far smaller, but it's definitely smaller. And I think my right side compensates a lot for my left side. I think it goes to the left knee injury when Cessnock High School defeated Scone in the Commonwealth Bank Cup. I may have scored two tries in front of the school, and then someone rolled on my knee, crushed my knee, and I went to the doctor. It was a great game. We killed Scone that day. Someone fell on my left knee in a tackle, which hurt, and then my mum took me to the doctor, and the doctor basically said, oh, he'll be right, you know, just let him. And it was never right. And I kept playing rugby league, and I remember in the grand final against Maitland Marsh Brothers, which was headed up by Matthew Johns, one of Cessnock's second biggest podcaster. And I got thrown into the front row. I'm telling you this because, you know, as a rugby league player, you know, you'll know what I'm talking about. I got thrown into the front row after half time, and I'd never played in front row. I was not a rugby league player. I just went there to try and interest, you know, get the eye of the girls, mate. And as soon as I packed into this scrum, my left knee just collapsed and fell over and just had nothing. Once again, back to the doctor. He said, oh, no, he'll be right. Just give it some rest. He's finished now. So away you go. And, my left knee now is just, I can feel it. I can just feel it's not 100%. And then obviously those ankle issues there. So, you know, my left side is really, really not great. So obviously, probably, does that make sense when you look at that aging golf swing? Does it make sense that these issues contribute to that?
100%. And if you've got those left knee injuries and ankle injuries there, you typically won't want to bear weight as much through that left side.
Hmm.
And for a golfer, we typically have, or you should typically have, around 90% of your weight on your left side coming towards impact and through the follow through. So if you hold some of your weight back, potentially, you're not going to load up that glute as much on your left side, which might lead down to smaller size or some potential weakness. But do you mind like talking about your golf fitness journey yourself, Ross? Because you were mentioning before the podcast that you saw someone down in Victoria there too.
Fire away. If you've got questions, I'm a pretty open book. There's not much that people who listen to this don't know about me.
I'm just keen to hear about your experiences and if you found benefits or potentially negatives from going down that journey too.
Okay, I'll call for this because Ben Croker, who was training me as a great young man, he's a very good golfer, comes from a golf coaching pedigree. And, you know, we had a specific program. I told him my needs and we worked on those specific areas and it was great. It was really good. You know, he pushed me where I needed pushing and when I needed pushing. There were times when we're going to talk about nutrition and hydration and all those things. There was a two times specifically when I turned up and I was underhydrated, probably hadn't eaten anything, and I had this, you know, I had to pull out of the session for a minute. Had to go and I got dizzy and giddy. But in terms of the overall journey, you know, 3 months, it was really good. I incorporated some swimming, you know, once again, Cessnock, playing water polo. You know, I went to water polo. It was a great sport, and I started swimming. I was a reasonable swimmer, so it's something that I enjoy, and we've got a pool. So I incorporated basically, you know, one or two sessions a week in the gym and then some swimming, and I lost some weight. I felt great. My mind was really active, and I was really happy. Sent me in a good trajectory for the holiday that we were sort of targeting, and was really good. But I did have some challenges through it. And one which is probably one of the factors why I haven't gone back. And I got some sort of injury in my right arm. Does not affect my golf at all. Like, doesn't affect me from hitting the golf ball. Doesn't present there. But anytime I go to lift anything up like this, it just, you know, like lifting a suitcase, lifting 33 kilos of, you know, Mrs. Mylove of golf suitcase on and off in the back of the car. It just killed me. And that happened through that training process. And, you know, Mrs. Mylove, that's my wife. She said, well, go and see someone about it. Go and get some whatever she does, you know, the needling and all that. And I don't go and do that. So I should do that. But I did come out of it with this injury, which sort of disappoints me, because I know now if I go back to doing anything that it's going to have some, you know, I can't do one-handed, you know, exercises for the upper body, chest and that of a strength. Actually, that bench press is okay. It's just the lifting part, this part, it's really sore. So that wasn't great, but yeah, sorry, I'm waffling. But the journey of doing it was good, and we did. You know, I was focused on the core, focused on strengthening the glutes and the hamstrings, not too much upper body. So yeah, it was. You know, I did it for 3 months, and I lost probably 3 or 4 kilos, and I felt stronger. But I just feel like I've come out of it with this injury, which has sort of hampered me, and I need to address that. So.
And so, Ross, is that on the inside of your elbow, like in that little bony part?
It's when I go to rub it to try and get some relief, it's, you know, just in there. So if you're watching, if you're listening to this, I'm pointing to what's that muscle there?
Right. That looks like your wrist extensor, that we call that one, around where some people will get tennis elbow. So on the outside of your elbow, looks like you're pointing out there, Ross.
So tennis elbow, my outside of my elbow is here. It's whatever this muscle is, you know, here, that when I clench my hand and flex on the top there, that big chunk of muscle just in there.
Yeah.
That's the one. Is that golfer's elbow? If you're going to tell me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. So, and typically injuries like that can present themselves when you increase training load or increase golf load pretty rapidly. And it sounds like you had a great program too by your trainer there. But what you might benefit from is some isolated strength exercise, just gentle, and you gradually build it up. And how those injuries settle is just gradually building some strength in those isolated muscles over time, and gradually that the pain tends to come down.
So the thought of leaving it alone and not doing anything is counterproductive. They actually should be doing some level of isolated in motion to help that, right?
100%. So complete rest is one of the poorer things you could do, in all honesty.
Yep.
You want to give it like a break, so pull down the training load slightly, but you want to still give it some stimulation so the strength can increase. Mm-hmm. And if you like, for mobility as well, you want to give it some gentle stretching as well.
Any other questions about my golf fitness journey? Because I need to resume, and maybe you've got, let's talk about your online work, because maybe you can help me via your online work. So you do offer your services face-to-face, but you have a program there where someone, if they don't have access to someone with your skills and knowledge around the golf swing, can get access to you. How does that work?
Yeah, so people get in touch with me either through my website, golffysiotherapyaustralia.com, or they can reach me through Instagram. And how it works is we go through our screening process. So again, we'll go through that TPI testing, which includes 16 different mobility tests. From there, we take your golf history. You send through a swing like you did this morning. I analyze that from a physio point of view. And based on your findings from the test, we set up a plan. And from that, I take into consideration your routine. So how much can you do in terms of like your training? How much time can you give me? And we develop some goals from that as well. So most of the clients I see, they either want decreased pain, they want extra mobility, or they want clubhead speed, or sometimes it's all three of them. So I build a plan tailored on your findings and tailored on your goals as well.
Now, if we're going to leave the listeners with something that they can do immediately without having to go through, you know, a physio strength conditioning led journey, and they're interested in the space, but they know that they're not going to go into the gym or into the pool, or they're going to, what are the things that people can do immediately that require no intensive training to help them be better golfers?
Yeah, and I've developed a warm-up guide exactly for that. I've got a free guide. I've just given it to golfers because I wanted it to be quick, easy, free, and they can just do it anywhere they are. So either I can send it to you, Ross, or they can send me an email at golfphysioaustralia@gmail.com, and I'll send them that guide. With the guide, there's 5 stretches they do, which is all golf specific, and there's 5 banded exercises with a little rubber band you can do. Otherwise, if you haven't got a band, just use your golf towel to act as that band. And a lot of clients have had good benefits from that. I had a client in South Korea that gained 7 miles just by doing this warm-up procedure, which is pretty bonkers, but it just proves that some people aren't moving very well prior to their play.
I'm the worst for turning up to the tee. my journey from the car park to the first tee is car park, pro shop. There's several members that I'll say good day to. I'll go and have a putt. And then whatever else happens, and then it's time to go to the first tee. Clearly, I've not allocated enough time. So you do need to commit to developing, to increasing the amount of time that you have available pre-round to do some of the exercises. But you're only talking about how much more time, really?
I'd say 10 minutes. Can get that done easily.
Yeah. The one thing that I have maintained since my fitness journey that Ben was able to leave me with, and you know, part of the warm-up was using one of those bands. We had a couple of different bands that we'd use, both to activate the glutes and the quads and the hammies, but also the upper, you know, this area. And I went to very simply Clark Rubber, and Clark Rubber sells stretchy band and stretchy hose by the meter, and it's in my golf bag, which I'm just pointing to there now, and I carry it with me. And if nothing else, that I will stand for a couple of minutes while the guys are getting ready and just do, you know, some of this, pulling it apart. I'm pulling my hands apart and both ways, hands up, hands down, and I'll use that to stretch. And, you know, obviously the few golf clubs, but the stretchy band is absolutely just been a huge asset to just keeping in that golf bag there, if nothing else.
100%. And on that point as well about those exercise bands, the Titleist Performance Institute put out a little brief study as well a little while ago, probably 3 years ago, about those bands, just doing 5 simple exercises like pull-aparts, squats with the band, things like that, and you'll gain 5 yards of distance just by doing some easy exercises. So again, I can link you to that article if you like, Ross, and people can have a look. It's quick, it's easy, and 5 yards after 14 tee shots is about 70 yards around that you'll gain for not doing too much. So it's a pretty easy way to gain some strokes.
We've spoken about speed training. Is there, you know, what's the easy way for people to incorporate speed training into their life without having to maybe go to an Orange Whip or speed sticks, or, you know, through all of those protocols? And it's quite, and some of the protocols to develop, go on the speed training journey, you know, like it's like any gym program. And that's what I say to people. If you aren't going to commit to a gym program, because they come in looking for speed sticks thinking that is the solution to the speed problem. And you can tell me if I'm wrong, because you've done the course. I've been trained on it, but I haven't done the course. You know, I say, if you're not going to commit to a gym program, you know, it's very hard to commit to this. If you're that type of mental attuned person that you don't go to the gym, it's not as easy as picking up speed sticks and expecting that the magic's going to happen. But are there things that people can do to help with their speed training that, you know, don't involve weighted speed sticks, Orange Whips, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, 100%. And in terms of like setting habits, again, going back to your point earlier, if you want to create a habit, try and associate it with something that you already do. So for example, if you're already practicing once a week, put your speed training into that session, because if you're going to have to make it a whole different session throughout the week, it might just get kicked to the wayside. So I'd say, look, if you don't want to spend any extra money, just pull out your driver, devote just 10 swings or 10 shots just to purely speed. Don't look at the ball. Don't look at the ball flight. Just purely think about the speed. I think that's a great way of doing it.
can you take that to hitting balls? Like, you know, for the range junkies that love to bash balls, is, you know, hitting balls with the driver as hard as you can, an effective way of, you know, doing what I think is referred to as overspeed training?
Yeah, it's certainly a great way and quick and easy way of getting that speed gain. I will put a caveat there that if you move really poorly, if you do have injuries, like, it can potentially flare them up. So just be careful on that. If you are going to do your speed training, do it right at the end of the session. So you're already loose, you're already moving okay.
I will say as well, having, you know, seen the after effects of people that try and hit golf balls at the range as hard as they can, as far as they can. If their swing dynamics are inappropriate for doing that, then don't do it. You know, and what I mean by that is, if you swing the driver as hard as you can and it touches the ground when you strike the ball, that is not great for you, because, you know, we'll talk about injuries and injury prevention maybe a little bit. You know, driving ranges typically are a mat of, you know, artificial turf of varying degrees of thickness, depending on the quality of the range and the quality of the mats and how often they're changed and so on and so forth. You know, they get worn away and all that sort of thing. Usually underneath that, there is a substrate. That substrate is usually concrete. Concrete by nature is really hard. So when you're hitting off the grass, you know, the grass is not on a concrete substrate, it's on dirt, and the dirt's much softer. If you can, you know, imagine for the range junkies, you know, hitting all of those seven irons, just peeling, you know, bucket after bucket, it's actually not great for, you know, if you're, it can be detrimental. And if you're hitting the driver and it's hitting the ground, don't do it, because you're going to damage the driver, you're potentially going to damage your own wrists, arms, whatever, and it's not going to lead to a good outcome. I fix broken drivers all day long. And seriously, like, I fixed broken drivers, and I said, yeah, I've been to the range. Yeah. And people are blown away by, how do you know I've been to the range? Well, there's a couple of telltale signs, people. The plastic grass burnt into the sole. Usually it's on the heel, and the marks on the top of, on the top of the club, you know, from the ball hitting the top, you know, as your impact is down. So if you've got those marks on top of your club, if you're hitting the ground, don't try overspeed training like we just described. Get your swing dynamics right, and then try that, because it'll just lead to disaster. The club will break halfway up the shaft, and you'll come in and go, mate, I just hit the 300 meter drive and everything broke. You know, surely that's warranty. Yeah, it's not always beer and Skittles like that. So that's, I just add the club sellers and fitters and repairers caveat onto that as well. Get your swing right.
Definitely, I agree.
What about, you know, the other unspoken about area in a lot of things that I think a lot of people understand or want to do better, but they don't do it better, is hydration and nutrition. Hands up, terrible. You've heard me talk about that with Jamie. Hydration, nutrition in terms of physiological, you know, contributors to performance, what does that look like? And just give us the basics and just tell us, people, do this or don't do it at your golfing peril.
Okay, so an easy way of monitoring it is just drinking a liter per hour. That's probably the gold standard. Mm-hmm. I will add some extras to that if it's super hot, let's say in the Victorian sun there, mate, in the summer it gets pretty warm, so you'd probably want to add extra to that. But the easiest way of checking is when you're going to the bathroom, if your urine is really green or really yellow, you're dehydrated. If it's clear, you're well hydrated. That's probably the easiest way of monitoring it. But also, the side effect of being poorly hydrated is it's confusion, it's fatigue, it's headaches. And you try closing out a good round with all those things in the background when you've got your heart rate up and you're nervous. So I think hydration, it's just one of those low-hanging fruits that all the pros get right, but not many club golfers get right.
Okay. So a liter an hour.
Yeah. And that's recommended by the Australian Dietitians Association. And again, that would fluctuate based on the conditions as well. So let's say around a golf, 4 or 5 hours, you want 4 to 5 liters.
Yeah, okay. That's a fair bit of fluid intake from where I sit. I guess it's just habit. It's habit performance, and
yeah.
How do you, you know, when you start your day, you know, how do you start your day in terms of hydration?
Oh, I have a liter at morning. As soon as I wake up, I'll just chug down a liter. Mm-hmm. Because again, you've been sleeping, your body is still processing, you're still breathing. So you're using oxygen, you're using all of these resources in your body. So you become dehydrated overnight. a really good book actually for this is Robert Yang's Hole-in-One Nutrition. So he's part of the TPI in America. He's a strength and conditioning coach, and he talks about that as well. So that's the way to start the day. And again, I understand on the golf course, it's an inconvenience. You'll need to go to the bathroom more, but you'll play better golf.
What about people who hydrate using caffeine? Let's talk about caffeine and its impact on performance positively and
yeah, that's an interesting one. And look, so with caffeine, it's a tricky one because some people will benefit from using caffeine at golf to pick up their heart rate. It can increase focus. So obviously that's great for golf. But on the other spectrum, like I know from my example, I can get a bit jittery when I use caffeine. So I typically don't use it for golf because it can increase the nerves. So again, it's really a trial and error type scenario. It's giving it a go, see if it works for you. If you need your morning cup of coffee to get going, perfect. If it makes you nervous and it makes you a bit anxious, then probably stay away from it.
Mm-hmm. Sugary drinks. What's the impact on a sugary drink as a form of hydration?
I think there's a place for it because if we're talking about sugary drinks like Gatorade, perfect. If we're talking about sugary drinks such as Coke or Sprite or these other drinks, then it may negatively affect your performance. Because when you have one of those sugary drinks, it does spike your blood levels in terms of sugar, which again can increase your energy levels for a short period of time, but also that can lead to a crash as well. So let's say if you're having it at the halfway point, you might have your sugary drink. For an hour, you might be really good. Then in your final last holes, you might start to feel a bit of fatigue. So I'd say what I prefer my players to do is to take a Gatorade. And you put a bit of water in that as well to dull it out a little bit. So it's not just like a chocolate bar in terms of the sugar intake. And that will help maintain some energy over that whole round.
Okay. So there are some good things in that sports nutrition drink that do help you. But oversaturating the sugar content is not great in relation to that. So you can water them down and get take an empty bottle and half it, and there's two of your liters for your round, so to speak. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly right. So I buy it from the grocery, so I just buy the tub of it I just mix it myself.
Yep.
Put a scoop in.
Yep.
It's cheaper that way.
Yep.
So that's typical to recommend my players to do as well. Pardon me.
Okay. So anything else that factors that people can implement easily that might increase their performance or not reduce their performance on the golf course from a physiological or physical aspect?
There's so many things you can do, but let's say if we're speaking to the audience now that sits down for 6 to 8 hours a day, plus or minus that, get up throughout the day, practice your golf swing, just in the office if you can, go through some rotation, maybe do that 5 times, a couple of times a day, and that will just keep your movement there. Because the biggest thing I see with the players that I teach and the general population golfers I see is they're sitting down for so long. So a lot of the stuff they do in the gym from a flexibility standpoint will reverse after you've sat down all day. So my biggest advice is just try and do some general movements throughout the day, get up and go for a walk every couple of hours, and that will help you maintain mobility and you'll feel less stiffness as well.
Are there any stretches that you can do very easily? If you are one of those workers or people who have a daily routine of sitting down a lot, are there any stretches that you can do like every time you get up that are really easy and really beneficial? Like I quite often find myself using the I see the door frame in the picture behind you, using the door frame to get some movements. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but it feels better when I do stretch and sort of sustain a stretch there for just using the door frame. Have you got examples of things like that around the house that you can do really easily? If you're going to improve your golf and your physical speed, you've got to stretch a little bit more. Here are 3 or 4 things that you can do just by doing it around the house.
Yeah, I love that, mate. And I work based on, convenience for people as well. I understand people are busy. So some easy ones I like is in your chair, you can just try and rotate your chest like you're watching me here, just turning your torso like you're making a backswing.
Yep.
And use your hands on your chair to get you a bit further around. That's a nice one. I like standing up and just arching the back. So again, just extending and trying to reach down towards the back of your hamstrings. That's a nice one. I like the door frame stretch that you mentioned. I give that a lot to my clients. And a nice one as well is when you're sitting there, if you cross your leg over, like you're crossing your leg or your one leg over the other, doing the opposite of that. So having your leg on the ground, I'll just show you, Ross, you might be able to explain it better.
Yeah.
So my leg's going out in the opposite direction. A hip stretch. So
that's like an internal hip stretch type.
Exactly. We call that internal rotation.
Yeah.
So if you're listening at home, if you're sitting down, you walk your left foot out about 20 centimeters. And from there, you'll just push your knee gently towards the midline of your body. And that should stretch your hip around your pocket area or maybe inside the groin area as well. So it's essentially doing the movements opposite of what you're doing when you're sitting.
That is super, super beneficial stuff, you know, like for people that, that don't need to go or don't, not don't need to go, but don't want to go into that full extensive program. And
yeah,
I think, you know, giving them a couple of tips like that, you know, is absolutely critical. Is there anything else, you know, is there anything that we haven't covered that, you know, that we can cover that we've missed out on? You know, it's been like most of my podcasts, they sort of start and then go on a bit of a journey. We come back to the point, but I usually try and evoke some of the responses out of my personal experiences. Is there anything that else that, you know, you had in your mind that you really do want to feel like you need to cover off, Billy?
The last thing I'll leave people with is if they want to get into their golf fitness or if they want to get more into training, great, 100% go for it. The only thing I'll say to that is don't go too quick. Mm. So there's one thing in the physio space we call the acute to chronic workload. What that means is it's basically taking the past 6 months of what you've done on average in terms of activity, and then it's taking the next 1 month of after you've started this new activity. So for example, if you far exceed what you've done in the last 6 months, in terms of your physical activity, your body sometimes inflames and takes a negative effect to that. So I'd say to people, if they're looking to get into golf fitness or get into some sort of training regime, it's probably work with a professional, or if they're doing it themselves, take it slow and steady. That wins the race. Going from zero to 100 rarely wins.
And you made me think about nutrition there, you know, talking about inflaming. You know, is nutrition something that, you know, you cover? Is golf physio sort of branched into that? Is, you know, like inflammatory, you know, especially with, like me, you know, there are a whole heap of foods that you put into your body, I believe, that, you know, can help exacerbate some of these inflammatory injuries that you might carry. Is that something that you talk about?
Look, it's a bit outside of my expertise. So yeah, I focus more on the mobility, strength, the physio side of things. I do typically send clients the Australian Dietetics Guideline. So that's something everyone can get online. You can go to the Australian Dietitians Association and download that. But yeah, I just go with the basics, mate. Like, it's getting enough protein, carbs, fats.
Yep.
If I say much more than that, it's probably just going outside of my realm, and I'd rather leave that to the professionals.
In round golf, you know, we talked about hydration and the you know, some of the importance of doing that. That's fairly obvious, but, you know, still people don't do it. I see it. I'm part of it. Also not part of great nutrition on the golf course. You know, what's the connection there with nutrition on the golf course? What can we do very simply that helps you in that space?
Yeah, so similar to the hydration, it's having food over that period of time and making sure that you're not getting hungry. Because again, hunger can affect your hormones, and it can affect your blood sugar levels as well, which can alter performance. So my advice around that is to smack small but often throughout the golf course. I'd say probably every hour have something small to eat, whether that's nuts, a banana, something that's going to keep you satisfied, but it's not going to make you feel full and gluggy. And I will plug Caddy Snacks, who are down, I think, your way.
No, they're in Celine and Arun, they're in Sydney, and I'm a big fan and big supporter of Caddy Snacks. So you didn't know that, but no, let's keep plugging. Very good.
Yeah, so they sent me some trials just last week, and I've used them with a few of my clients, and they're great. So they use natural ingredients, they're vegan friendly, and they taste great. So that's probably a nice little snack you can have throughout your round to keep your energy levels high and to make sure your focus is on your score.
You've seen the product. I've now consumed probably 100 meters worth of the product. They're not a long bar, but, you know, is it one or two in the round? Or is it, you know, half of one, first four holes, second four holes, you know, that sort of thing? What would you suggest? Because they're gaining massive, you know, they're doing a great job supporting young, developing Australian golf talent, which is, you know, massive tick. As you've just identified from a health professional's perspective, you know, the product, you know, ticks all of the standards that you want there from, you know, nutritional and health perspectives. Tick. Great, you know, like, it's online, so you can buy it, you can get it in a box, you can get different flavors. Tick. So, you know, there's a whole different range there. Mm. How many would you eat?
Yeah, that's very dependent on the person's size, I'd say, Ross. So let's say, for example, a small female, she'll maybe have a small half every 1 hour. Say if it's me or you, bigger blokes, we might have one Again, it's probably dependent on your body size, because that's going to depend how much energy you burn. Mm-hmm. So if it was me, I weigh 95 kilos, I'd be having one every nine. Yeah. And I'd probably break it into halves.
Yep.
So just so I'm not too full. I don't like to eat much at the golf course. I just like to have enough energy to keep me going.
Yeah. Look, it's going to sound like it's contrived, but it's absolutely not. You know, since I started using their product, you know, we at Big Swing Golf in Melbourne, definitely we have them available. So I've got pretty good access to them. But definitely since I took a heap to Scotland, and once again, you know, not a great nutrition person, but I've started to be very much diligent with that product. And this isn't a plug for Caddy Snacks, but I've just been using it. And I definitely feel a difference. I told this to Aurora, and I said, from having the base of no nutrition or very bad nutrition on a golf course to having something like that was so clearly I got to the space where I was used to not eating much. So I didn't want to go. I've definitely been that person that had the pie at halfway or the sandwich at halfway. And I just don't like eating during the round a lot. So starting the Caddy Snacks journey, it definitely made a difference, especially in that second nine. There you go. That comes as no surprise. Sorry. That's perfect. I'm stating the obvious, but there you go. Well, I didn't know you were going to talk about them, but I'm glad you did, because they're good people.
Very good.
Anything else, mate?
It's been so good, mate, and I do highly appreciate you having me on.
Do you think we can start a program together? Can we work together and experiment with that online? Because I do need to get back into it. So this might be, you know, you and I might be the catalyst, and we can probably share a bit of that journey. If you want to do that, I'm up for it. We can talk about that offline. Very good.
100%, Ross.
Billy Troy, thanks for joining us. It's been great. It's been a good, if nothing else, it's been a good reminder for me to get out of the chair and get back down to the gym and get in the pool and get back out on the golf course. Hoodie season will soon be away from us, and we'll be short sleeve season in Melbourne. As I remind you, there's only two seasons here. Thank you very much, mate. We appreciate it, and we'll see you next time on the My Love of Golf podcast, eh?
Ross, I really appreciate it, and thank you for everything that you're doing in the golf community, mate. I know that it's hard and time consuming to make these episodes, so thank you, and thank you to Jamie and the rest of your team, mate. I highly appreciate it.
No problems. That's why we keep doing it. We love giving back, and it's mentally stimulating, mate, so we'll keep doing it. Thanks very much, mate.